Welcome to the Destined for Success podcast. I'm your host, Jennifer Takagi, and this podcast used to be called New Manager Media, Manage Right from the Start. Many of the concepts are the same, but there's a little shift. There's a shift because I know we are all destined for success, and I want to help you find the fastest, smoothest way to reach your highest best as quickly as possible. Join me in today's episode where you're going to come up with new ways to build your skills and influence others to make the impact you desire to make. I look forward to connecting with you soon. Welcome to Destined for Success. I'm your host, Jennifer Takagi, and today I'm so honored to have Dr. D with us. Dr. D's talk is The Hidden Power of Disappointment, based on her book. And wow, have we not had lots of disappointment. Dr. D is a scientist at heart and a coach by craft. I love that. And a catalyst by nature, with a background in biological sciences and neuroscience, paired with advanced degrees in leadership and team empowerment. Dr. D has spent her career decoding what truly drives human potential, especially in high achievers, entrepreneurs, and visionary leaders. And this means so much to me because having been a leader, a manager, supervisor, all the different kinds of titles throughout my life, when I left my government job as a manager and started learning all the things I should have, could have learned and known, and I would have been such a better leader. I was like, wow, like I need to share this with people because it could have been easier on me and my staff, like all the way around. The whole thing could have been easier. Welcome to the show. And how on earth did you get into this? I love this biological stuff, nature stuff, machine stuff.
A little bit of everything, right?
I know. I love that. I love that.
I knew you were reading your bio. I was like, she does everything. So, well, I'm glad to be here. I got to listen to quite a few of your podcasts. And I love this concept that you said that there's a difference in management and leadership. And very early on, I started in science, wanting to be pre-med, and then I got called into leadership. And at that time, there's a big difference. I was really a manager. I was a manager of people in my 20s, working for an embassy. And I thought, I could do this better. And I wasn't resonating with it as much. I loved leading people. I loved that vision and then strategically, growing that to that level. But I got some feed forward from people that said, you demand too much, or your vision is too big, or certain things, or, maybe not be so direct, but be direct. You want to have personal agency. But that led me into exploring this whole concept of what in the 20s, like, what makes some people successful and others not. It cannot be the way they grew up, right? It can't be exactly what state they come from or what country. It has to be some inner work. And that's why I started exploring psychology, which led then later on, still in leadership roles and organizations. I thought they'd move too slow. How can we speed this up? So then I kind of like you, where you just study the whole approach. I'm like, well, let's throw some positive psych in there because that's better. Emotional intelligence, that's fascinating. But it's always this indicator of, can I measure what we're doing? And so when I became a leader in a university, I wanted to measure my leadership with a benchmark program, like one that's been researched. That's all they do is research good leaders, and you get these 360s. And those gaps made me say, you know what, I'm going to look at coaching because I have a PhD in leadership, I have an MBA, and I still can get better. And that's when I started looking into coaching, and it turned the whole frame, like, leading is about listening. And I did listen, but I listened at a level that was for the next action. And so I started being fascinated, what's on the other side of listening in leading? And it's a big difference in management, as you said, because you're like, Management's focused on what's the next action or policy. Leadership's what's the next ex, what's the next uncovering, as I say in leadership. So that's when I decided to move out of leadership entirely. No roles, nothing informal. And I started coaching, and more until full time coaching. Always still fascinated with the science piece, and that's when I got into neuroscience of the brain. I'm like, if I can figure this brain thing out, right? If I can figure this brain thing, we are going to make this objective. We're going to make this more objective and measurable to people. And not only that, there's this side that you have the human side, and then you have the spiritual side. You do both. You do both in a way that's palatable for wherever they come. But if I can at least start with the science side and just say, this is what's going on, I found out for myself, it unhooked me and my high expectations in the world. I could still have them, but I find them funny when they fail versus right. I'm like, oh, that's fascinating. That failed. And it only took me a day to get up this time instead of a week. That's fascinating to me. So I have paired the two. I just love the science. I've always loved the science. And so it makes up for the fact that I didn't become a doctor, I suppose. But it also, I love unhooking people and healing what they're doing to themselves. And for me, coaching is one avenue, but the emotional intelligence science and the neuroscience combined together fascinates me, right? Like, fascinates me.
It is. It's so much fun, and it's so much fun when you can, like, you're having an interaction with somebody and you can just very easily know what's triggering them, what's bothering them. And you're like, man, and I even have an answer for that if only they wanted to hear it. But I have an answer for that.
You can tell them, yeah, right?
Yeah, I love it. Well,
So
the
that,
powers of disappointment, I mean, that intrigues me. And I know that's all
oh,
tied to the neuroscience, but
it,
it's like, and I love that. You know, it used to take me a week to get back up. Now I get up in a day. So
yeah,
that's
right,
like, let's look at that.
yeah. Well, I realized early on my personality types, the ENTJ, that's just a personality type, it's a preference. But we love leadership and we love moving things forward, just like you do. I know you do the same, but you're more visionary. But I realized that my pictures, my minds just would sometimes flop. Like I couldn't get it to that level. And then so I realized early on, this is what this feels like. The other thing is, it is a source of avoidance for so many of my leaders. I don't want to feel it. I will do risk aversion, anything I don't feel that thing. High achievers are the same. I'll suppress it. And so a couple years ago, several years ago, I was really starting to research, like, what is the science behind this? Because that has to lend to some theory. And Jennifer, it's so fascinating. Like, I found out there was a spot in our brain that it's specially made for disappointment.
Wow.
Yeah, the Habenula. It's called, and it's just in your brain to feel disappointment. I
And
mean,
what's it called?
it's the habenula, and it's like micro connected to other pieces, luckily. And I thought, oh, that would explain it. But good riddance. We have a special spot just for that. Like that. Then when I read that a couple years ago, I'm like, I am going to see what I can do with my clients to not avoid, but to unhook, to notice it, unhook, because the biology of it is fascinating. It's going to get triggered. And it's disappointment by definition is the expectation was not met. So what we expected, we did not see, right? So we have a gap. And that's all it means. But the effect on people is great. It is why some achievers stop trying, because I don't want to be disappointed, or I'm always disappointed, or you have some that have perfectionism, then that's wired in their part of the brain, almost like, a cycle of I'm never happy because I'm always disappointed, right? So that fascinated me. And then, of course, while writing the book, suddenly, like, tons of disappointing events popped up. Luckily, then I made stories out of them too. But It was so freeing for my clients to lean into what does it look like for me? What's going on? What are my triggers around this? What ego work do I do here? And it started freeing them to do some of the activities. So my middle part of my book is all about let's, the 5 steps to get through the process. One is resurgent, that's more toward the end. But Jennifer, I find that it's just like so freeing for people to have a process to go and navigate it and get on the other side of what did I learn, what did I leave, and what did I let go? Because that's the power, the hidden power of disappointment. It ignites part of our brain and creativity if we look for it. That's the hidden power. It makes our brain like hypervigilant to possibilities. Most people don't realize that's the power, right? Most people are like, I just want to avoid it. And then they get overreactive. But that's right. I don't know if you, if not you, but other people, right? Other people like overreact. And so,
I do. I do. I can. And I can do it dramatically.
with some flair, right?
Yes.
With some wonderful flair. Yeah, right. So that's we call that the with my class, the reactive. You want to be reactive, or you want to have rhythm. We're not going to stop triggers. Yeah. So then, in that reactivity, though, don't you feel like a loop happens for you? Like now I'm going to question my other things, and now I'm going to feel guilty, right? You ever feel that?
Yeah, there's like this whole deal, and then you're like, I could have done that better. Years ago, my husband and I were as in marriage counseling. We had a lot happen very quickly in our marriage, and it was like, I can't manage this. There was a lot. And so we went to see our associate pastor who had a master's in clinical psychology. So it was really kind of
Yeah.
great instead of just going to a preacher who says, "Look at God, quit looking at each other." Okay, that's not helping me right now. I'm not that big. I'm not that good of a person today. So we're in there one day and one of us had blown up about something, flip a coin which one of us it was, right? And he said, "The Old Testament has, I think it's in Proverbs, maybe Proverbs or Psalms, one of those P ones. And it says, there is a road that feels right, or there is a path that feels right to man, but in the end, it leads to death." And he said, when you blow up at somebody, when you vent, we all like to vent, right? Get it off my chest.
Yeah.
But when you vent, you're literally killing part of the relationship. Every time you do that, it just builds and builds and kills the relationship. The New Testament does not have a quote about this, but like the whole point of the New Testament of the Bible is there is a road that feels like death, but in the end, it leads to life. And that feeling like death is when you don't react, overreact. React inappropriately, you don't murder part of the relationship. And so it'd be like, oh, like, man, I just did it. I just killed another little part because I just reacted. And so through some other things like level three behavior, that's a whole nother conversation we won't get into
Oh,
today.
I'd love
But
to hear.
like level three behavior is like doing the right thing, not being reactive, like really thinking it through and not being judgmental. So I've got a little core group of girlfriends, and when we're having a bad day and we like diarrhea of the mouth of all the little things about that airplane that never took off and we had to change flights and blah blah blah. It's like, man, Jennifer, like literally I got a text that said, "This is not level three behavior." And when I finally arrived, I said, "This was not only not level three, like I don't think I made it to one. Like I was so terrible." But like those are the things that you have to choose in the moment every single time. Like, I'm not going to react. I'm not going to have a fit. I'm going to take a breath. What did we always hear growing up? Count to 10.
Well, there's something to that, right?
There's so much to it. And like, why didn't I learn that when I was 12? But I didn't
Right? No. You
I did
learn the other
not.
way. You learn that if we're more reactive, we get a little more attention. And then that was a release, right?
Yeah. Then you're like, oh man, I saw the look on his face and I just killed something. I just did.
It is insightful that you got that message from that source. You know, I mean, that is super powerful. And that is what is fascinating about the more we, and you've heard this before, Joe Dispenza, everybody says, the more you fire, the more you wire it. So the more that we choose, because it feels right in the moment, it feels so right, you know, complain. And the more we wire that and fire that, the more it becomes the culture. So that's one thing when we talk about disappointment is you just get better with it. But even in your culture, it's taking out that water cooler talk. It's taking all that firing out so that you have to, like you said, I'm going to choose to step back, de-escalate, because nothing good is going to come out when I'm flooded. Right, nothing's good, and it's just going to keep wiring that thing, that you know, the midbrain. The midbrain loves reactivity, and most people, and even in leadership roles, did you learn anything? I mean, I didn't at first management learn about the step back because now you're rewiring it or anything like that. I think it's so important that they understand the way you communicate to people. It's probably your most powerful tool. Listen and communicate. And that means, how do you communicate to yourself when you got triggered and something didn't look right on the team, right? Like you said.
Yeah. And on that whole reactivity thing is, and I used to do leadership development training for the state of Oklahoma. And one of the things I would say is, like, you have a chance to be better tomorrow. Like,
What's
whatever you
that?
did today that might have fallen short or you think you could have handled better, you don't have to beat yourself up all day, but you can choose. Tomorrow, I'm going to handle it differently because in the workplace, as well as in relationships, the one big lesson I learned is whatever problem you face, you're just going to keep having the same problem until it's resolved. And it's usually communication related, right? So as
Yes.
soon as you can quit having the fight over the same thing and
Yes.
resolve it, the easier it's going to be all the way
It
around.
is. Because we tend to do the same pattern over, looking for a different result. And I love that you said it's communication. That's why I got excited about neural communication. If you just switch some of those words, like rapport building words, you change the, it's called the neural regulation. You change your energy, and you will know about energy. You change your energy between you and that person, right? And the dynamic shifts. And it's so cool to watch that rapport building, and it's inner work. And it's inner work to be able to say, in my inside, I say this on the outside. I had a couple guy clients that were like, but what if I think they're an idiot and I just don't say it out loud? I'm like, nice start. Not, I said, we just talked about mirror neurons. It doesn't matter. They will feel that. And that's your work. No one is that. You're labeling, and labeling is one of the first steps to the flooding. You know, that is our, I just feel as leaders, it's their and our responsibility to keep that inner work going so that our communication keeps improving around whatever it is. And it's not the person, it's objectively the thing they're doing,
Yeah.
right? Behavior, separating the person from the behavior, because our brain is just going to be wired to reactivity if we don't rewire it to be calm.
There is something, and I just have it here, and I'm trying to find it, and I'm not going to. Oh. In high performance coaching, you start the session with, what are you excited about? And it's very different when you think about complaining and all the things that went wrong with my flights of trying to get to the event, blah, blah, blah. But when you start a coaching session or a conversation, and I have started doing with this with some people who like will go down a negative path for like way longer than I want to be there. But if you start, what are you excited about right now? That like flips that whole dynamic from that complaining and negativity, because it's like, oh, and it's very rare that you get a response of nothing. Like that might be another level of like, or a level of depression or whatever. Like they might have more help than I can provide or
It's
provide.
indicated, yeah.
But when you start that conversation with, what are you excited about? It just like flips it, because what do we usually do? And you might know the answer to this, and it would make me so happy if you did. Once upon a time, I was in some training, and they broke us into groups, and they asked us the same question for the two groups. But one group, it was come up with everything good about this, and the other group was come up with everything bad about this. And then we had to switch. If you started talking about everything good about a topic, you got a really long list. But if you started talking negative about it,
Very
all the
short.
bad things, then you could only come up with two or three good things. So if you start your path with everything that's good,
Love it.
you get a whole lot more. But I don't know where that came from. I don't know who told me. Have you heard that before? Is that like a
I
thing?
have that is a real thing, and you'll hear different authors say that. What are your five wins? What are your five micro wins? Well, here's what you're doing: is you're there's a part of our brain. And if it gets too scientific, just let me know. But if there's a part of brain called RAS, right? It says, let me filter my experience through that. So if we start with the filter, and this is why it's so important, do not let your team have that filter. But if you start with the filter, everything is going, these are all the bad things. The RAS says, then I will look for that and I will lock on. And it is slightly addictive, I think, for people.
Oh
If
my
you
gosh,
don't,
it's
isn't
so
it?
addictive.
It is because it is like why people watch an accident. It the amygdala goes fight, flight, or freeze, and it puts you in that state. Now you're trying to be resourceful and you're trying to do something, you're trying to make decisions. You have no capacity of this whole, right? Right? You don't have the capacity. So people are like, well, I'm just being realistic. That is not realism. That is negativity. That's skepticism. That means your brain doesn't want to look for anything. So positive sentiment override is where that came from. Gottman Institute talks about that with couples. It means you need to wire your brain for the prefrontal cortex and the RAS to say, I am looking for wins. I am looking for learnings. I'm looking for what's possible and positive. That's why people do gratitudes now. I mean, that was all that work. But that locks the RAS onto the right-hand side of the brain, and it says, things are possible. Things are possible. It's not in the membrane anymore. So wherever you did that, whenever, that science behind it still exists and even more. So when you do that, you know, even if you do it for your day, I'm having three wins today, and this will be this. Right? Or when you're low, it's really like the brain shift. That's how I see it. Like we have a choice, as you said, to go to the lowest denominator, which is the easiest, right? You know, the amygdala, or we literally flip the switch. And that choice is every day. Do we choose that choice? And do we build that muscle, right? That's all it is. It's building the muscle, right?
I was at my sister's and I was talking to my brother-in-law and he was getting all crotchety and I picked up my purse to leave and he goes, wait, I want you to help me with this. And I went, no, you're grouchy. And he goes, I am. I'm an old man and I can be grouchy. And I said, yeah, and I can walk out the door and I can leave and I don't have to listen to you be grouchy. And he was like, but, and I went, no, I'm out.
It's a good boundary, isn't it? That's a good boundary. And
Well,
that, right?
listen to people and you want to have compassion, right? Like we want to be compassionate, empathetic people. If you're listening to this podcast, you should be wanting to be an
Yes.
empathetic, sympathetic person. But at the same time, you don't have to be beat up by somebody that wants to live in that, pit of
No.
negativity that like we're not going to get anywhere in this
Yeah.
conversation. So I'm just going to hug you goodbye and I'm out that door.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you say, but there's a differentiation from compassion. Like you said, compassion sometimes setting that boundary so they can step back and say, actually, that this negativity is not where I want to be. And compassion's out of our heart, right? That's what we talk about in generous authority is lead with compassion. It means putting a boundary around the lowest limiting beliefs that the people around you have. And that's not all of us. We need to do that work, but put a boundary around the lowest limiting beliefs of your team and have them build new ones. What's possible? What if everything was plausible? What would be exciting, as you said? If opportunities were limitless, what would it be? But it is really important in any culture, but any leadership is to really think about what do I want to wire in the people around me? What do I want to wire myself, right? So I think compassion, like you said, is even more, it is so powerful because it also says, I am not going to allow a trigger to come out in my communication. If I get triggered, I'm going to have processes and I'm going to come out very clear. I'm going to, in neuro language, we always say use inclusive language, use language that builds rapport, but that is very clear about what would I like to see? What do I already see? And what would I like to see for this relationship, right? So it's holding people to kind of a standard that they want, 'cause it's painful, right? When we have those reactions, they're not fun after you're done, right?
Because you've killed part of the relationship and you're
Yes,
together.
exactly. That's a t-shirt. I've killed part of the relationship today.
Didn't mean
Right.
to, but damn, I did it. Next time,
I did it again.
think
Oh,
better.
yeah. But it's true because if you study Hawkins' work, David Hawkins studied just, I love these, Jennifer. I tell my clients, I love these people that just research one thing. He studied energy frequencies of every emotion. And when you allow react, I'm getting so excited to pull it down. When you allow reactions like negativity, fear, anger, compulsion, the energy is lower. The regulation of the room will lower unless you have somebody that's a higher frequency. So like compassion is one of the highest. It takes work to get there. It's not like one client said, can I just fake empathy? No, we're not talking about that, but it
Back it
raises.
up and get you some, buddy.
Yeah. You're gonna need to do work because empathy means that I went inside and stopped judging myself. I just stopped judging myself and was more compassionate to self. Which is sometimes for leaders, and one of your podcasts said, reach out for help. That's so true. Reach out and also heal within, because then you're going to be a better leader. And that's the piece. So you, what did you say? So you don't kill a part of the relationship, right? Because you do, if we express it in that way, over and over again, right?
Well, and there's the, right now, I think, and I haven't done any, statistics on this in a few years, but a few years ago, I did see something that like we had more generations in the workforce than had ever been in there before. We still had the traditionals. We had the baby boomers, the Gen X's, the Gen Y's, and the Gen Z's were coming in. So like we have this whole thing. And shortly after COVID, I reached out to a man that I worked with and have known for years in Washington, D.C. And I don't know why. I just thought about him and I was like, oh my gosh, his wife's a teacher and he's a federal executive. And he, like, God, I think that kid's in college. Like, what's happening with him? And I reached out and he called and he goes, wow, yeah, like I have my spot in the house where I do my work and my wife has hers and our son's in college. So he's home now because nobody was even in college. And he goes, but it's really lovely. We all come together for lunch every day. And like, how many times as a college student do you get to sit down and have lunch with your parents? Which I had great parents. I'm assuming they were great parents because they're I met him and his wife. They were great people. So surely they were good parents. I'm
For
going to
sure.
make that assumption.
Yeah.
But like, how often do you get to do that, right? And he said, I always hated working from home and I thought I never had, but I hated that employees did. I thought it was bad. I thought it was terrible. And now I'm seeing all the possibilities. And I said, yeah, who knew we were the old farts going, we want you in the office. We want to see you. And now, oh my gosh, now they're like, all kinds of organizations are like, oh, yeah, we just need four people in the office to do these types of jobs, and the other people don't need to be. And it's that change, it's that embracing the difference. But when you are just so focused on either the negativity or what won't work, I had a conversation with my husband one day and I said, I'm going to tell you something, but I don't want you to react because it's going to happen anytime soon. And he goes, okay, what? And I said, I want to do a little home remodel, and this is what I want to do. And he immediately, like, I barely got my vision out. And he goes, that's a weight-bearing wall, and you can't do that. And where are you going to do this? And like, he just like was shredding it. And I just let him go. Like, I just let him shred it. And I said, weight-bearing walls can be sheared up. I've watched enough HGTV. We can't personally do that. Somebody can, and you need to let it go because one day it's going to happen. I'm just giving you enough headway so when it does,
Be
you can
ready.
say, oh, you told me this was going to happen. Obviously, he will be involved when I actually get around to doing it. But it's that immediate response to no, it's bad, it will never work. And that goes along with this whole leadership style and looking for the positive and the what ifs, right? Because your day just looks so much better when you wake up. And what is that song? Good morning to you. Good morning to you. We're all in our places with bright, shiny face. I mean, silly little song, but yes, I sing it to my cat on occasion. Yes, I do.
Nice, right?
And he doesn't like it at all. I'm
Oh,
just going to say,
well, he'll
Luigi
get
the
over it.
cat does not like it at
Yeah.
all. But we have to choose. And in Oprah's latest book, well, she might have had another one, but a couple of years ago, I listened to her audiobook and she said, whatever decade it was, she had her gratitude practice. And she wrote every
Cute.
night before bed, she wrote three things she was grateful for that day. And there was no repetition, which to me, I was like, oh, you can't repeat. Like, how do you do that? Now I know how you do that. But at the time, I was like, oh my gosh, that's too big for me. I can't do that. And she said, I created and manifested more amazing experiences and business deals and money than in any other 10 years of my life. And I don't know why I quit doing it. But you set your brain looking for more positive things to
It
happen.
overlooks for it. Yeah, it really, and that's the piece that, and it's not like a flighty thing. We have the science to back that. When people, you raise their emotional intelligence, which means they're wiring the brain to look for that. That means they have better productivity, goes up like 48%. So if you want to think about productivity, is find their strengths, invest in some emotional intelligence growth, because in the end, and the decision making goes up like 35, 38%. And that means better leaning into risk, making better decisions, looking environmentally scanning. So it's not a theory, it's a the practice of, right? That we can prove that when you are wiring your brain not to point fingers, that's a rule, not to blame. You're looking for what is it that we see, what is it that we see we don't like, and what is it see we want to choose to create. It is an inclusive way for everybody to wire that we're in this, we got each other's back, and we are going to move forward. And it raises so much, as you said, potential in people. And have them do the same thing, have them do the gratitudes. And your brain likes novelty, so make sure it is different, because that is like, it's there's sometimes it's just a fast thing to switch that RAS off. But people think, well, it's too easy, that why should I do that? But it's too easy because you're wired to be able to do it, right? Switch it
Well,
off.
and does it have to be hard? Like,
No.
when I was in college, people tease me about this. God, I got teased last night by my uncle about this. I have a degree in French and Spanish. No, I don't use them. When I travel places, they speak Spanish. I can speak quite a bit. France, no. Like, I try, but they're like, what did you say, lady? It's been too many years, right? And he goes, how'd that work out for you? And I was like, sometimes you get a job because you have a degree. And I don't know where I came up with this theory, but I share it. People don't listen to me, but I share it a lot. I share it a lot. They should pay attention to me.
I want to hear the
But
theory.
When you go to college, and you don't have to, right? You can come up with all kinds of careers without college, but I wanted to go to college, and I wanted to go to college because I wanted to put off getting a full-time job as long as possible. Like that was my
That's
motivating.
very transparent. Yes, that's
Yeah,
good.
that was my motivating factor. I never wanted to drink coffee because I knew if I stayed up all night, that wouldn't be good. I was a sleeper. I never wanted to take a math class, and I graduated with a separate honors degree on top of my bachelor's with a double major, without ever drinking coffee and without taking a math class.
I don't know how you did that.
Yeah,
Interesting.
yeah. And then never to make it below a 3.0 because I knew it'd be too hard to bring it up. So, like, those were my goals. No coffee, no math class. Never below a 3.0, and I crushed it. Like I won on all those fronts. But I picked something that I was interested in and I had an aptitude for. I learned languages very easily. I don't know why, I just did, but I learned them very easily. I liked them, I enjoyed it, so it was easy for me. And I had a boyfriend that I ended up marrying for 12 months and 11 days, the worst 12 months and 11 days of my life.
Because you're
One
Europe.
day said, college is easy for you because you have an easy major. And I took that to heart for a little while, like, I don't know, like 12 minutes maybe. And I'm like, you're full of crap. It is not easy. Like, I'm in those classes watching people fail because they don't know how to conjugate a verb. They don't know how to diagram a sentence. And they surely don't have any capability of pronouncing something correctly. And I was like, nope, that's not true. And I later, after college, I met people, and they're like, I had to major in this because my parents made me and I hated it and I barely graduated. Why? They had no interest in it or aptitude for it, but they were forced to do it.
Exactly.
So you ha and it's the same way with a career. Sometimes I had to make a list of reasons why I was still with the federal government because some days it was hard. But it was like, wait, but what do I get out of this? I get to help people. I get to help people that wouldn't have had help but otherwise, and I get a paycheck and benefits. So, okay, like I can do this today. Like I can suck it up. I can do it. But you
Right.
have
It's
to like
leverage.
put it all together, right?
I love that you said that. It is putting it together and aligning it with yourself. So this C.S. Snyder has this hope theory. I thought it was brilliant in 1994. And what he said is, people, you said it. I achieved goals. I made them very clear. But there was a will and a way. A will is, I will do this, or I will say, I don't do this, but I will do this. I don't drink coffee. It becomes identity. The way is, it connects to my energy and it connects to something I just have an aptitude for, right? You're more likely, you're 48% more likely to fulfill that goal because it's very clear for your brain and it has an avenue. And then it's a motive, right? Because the heart wants to connect to a bigger contribution. So I love that you gave that example. So many people are not asking, what's in my purpose? And then it's not going to always be easy, but then at least you're aligned. And so if disappointment comes or a reaction comes, you can say, but it is still my way. And I'm learning things in my way. I'm not learning things in somebody else's aptitude. I'm learning for me. And so this is going to exponentially help my field or help what I'm doing. And I like that you separate that out to really be able to ask yourself, it's both those things. And our brains love that. For success, they love that, right? Very clearly stating that.
So fun. Like, I love this conversation. Like, we could go on all day. Your book is The Hidden Power of Disappointment.
Yeah, Bounce, The Hidden Power of Disappointment. It comes out, and I might have up. It comes out in this fall, probably October, to Amazon. It'd be hard
All
copy.
right. So, this podcast is actually coming out before. So, make a note and we'll have it in the show notes, the book, The Power of Dis the Hidden Power of Disappointment, because usually we're trying to avoid it. And I love that,
Yes.
you know, we number one, we can't avoid it. Number two, that we actually have a part of our brain that want like is looking for it. Like, where
Yeah.
is that disappointment? Gosh, this
Interesting.
has been so fun getting to know you, Dr. D.
You too. It's
As
awesome.
we wrap up, any final words for the audience?
Well, I think final words is really explore this book. Of course, I just think it'll open up the doors. And if you are anybody, you're a leader or a high achiever, look for someone that can help your mindset and change that. You're welcome to look at our website, blueeggleadership.com. We have starting up Monday Mind Shift Labs that are starting in August. But there are so many resources out there for you as leaders, and learn now. So like Jennifer and I, you could take those instruments and lead more effectively without so much pain. I think that's what the message is.
Yes, I love that. So all the information to reach out to Dr. D and find out more about Blue Egg Leadership will be in the show notes, and you're probably on your phone, so all you have to do is click the button. It's there. It's not hard. It's so easy. You just click the button. I'm Jennifer Takagi with Destined for Success, and I look forward to connecting with you soon. Thank you for taking your time to spend with me on this latest podcast of Destined for Success. Please take a moment to leave a review, share it with a friend, and subscribe and get the newest episodes every Monday morning. I'm Jennifer Takagi, and I look forward to connecting with you soon.